Thank you for inviting me. So I'm Keith Gharia from IAS. Today I would like to talk about my recent work regarding the phenomenology of the strong CP problem. So let me first briefly introduce what the strong CP problem is. So that is regarding the QCD. So first of all, we naively expect the neutron has non-zero electric dipole moment because it is composed of the quark with positive charge and negative charge, and it has non-zero spin. So we naively expect that it has a dipole moment of the order of the QCD scale, which is 10 to minus 14 centimeter, which is expressed by the coupling between the neutron spin and the electric field. But however, experiments show that actually this neutron EDM is super, super small. So which suggests that QCD preserves so-called CP symmetry. So because this electric dipole moment is odd under CP symmetry, so which may forbid explain why the neutron EDM is very, very small. But however, this is not the case in the star model because star model does not preserve the CP. So to understand this, we need more precise discussions in quantum field theory. In the quantum field theory, the electric dipole moment is given by a parameter, so which is a linear combination of the phases in the quark mass, and the CP phase intrinsic to the QCD itself. And this combination must be smaller than 10 to minus 10. So basically, both of them should be very small. This looks fine, but it's not fine. So because in the standard model, those quark masses are given by the Yukawa matrix, up and down, and we have a QCD parameter. But from the measurement of the CKM phase, it is known that those Yukawa coupling must have non-zero complex phase. So we naively expect that just this contribution is order one. We cannot understand why the neutron EDM is very, very small in the standard model. So this is called the strong CP problem. So today I would like to talk about kind of solution to this strong CP problem. On the first part, I will talk about parity solution and its phenomenology regarding dark matter and ground unification. And if I have a time on the second part, I will talk about the kind of standard solution, namely action solution, and its dark matter phenomenology. So let me talk about the parity solution to the strong CP problem. So generically, so let me talk about parity symmetry again. If there exists a symmetry which relates exchange of left-handed particle and right-handed particles, so we may be able to solve the strong CP problem because that might forbid the QCA teletherm and hence the neutron EDM. Of course, this symmetry is not realized in the nature. So what we need to do is assume this symmetry at the phi UV and break it spontaneously at the low energy scale, so that we do not observe them. The first thing you would try is impose the CP symmetry, namely the case where this right-hand particle is an antiparticle of this left-hand particle. So in this case, the symmetry is often called CP symmetry. So in the level of QFT, this is expressed in this way. But unfortunately, so this essentially predicts that Yukawa coupling is real. So it clearly contradicts with what we observe about the CKM phase. So we need to break this, of course, this CP symmetry to make Yukawa coupling complex, to make it match the experiment. But of course, it largely introduced a complex phase and the strong CP problem. So basically, this mechanism does not work unless we introduce some sophisticated ingredients. So instead, I talk about more generic parity symmetry, the case where this right-hand particle, so which is the parity pattern of the left-hand particle, is not the antiparticle of this left-hand particle. So in this kind of scheme, coupling is not necessarily complex, but there are drawbacks. So we basically cannot introduce this symmetry unless we extend the gauge group, because in the standard models, we have SU to the left interaction, but there is no parity partner of this SU2 particle. So we must introduce the parity partner of SU2 interaction as well as SU2 right left-hand particle to impose this symmetry. But still, so this kind of scheme may have some interesting phenomenology because we extend the gauge groups, so which might predict a new particle or new interaction, so which might be observed in some kind of experiment. Today I will talk about this kind of phenomenology. So first, I will talk about dark matter phenomenology. The first thing you might want to try to impose a parity symmetry is to duplicate the full electric gauge group. In addition to the SU to the left times UR hypercharge, we can just introduce their parity pattern, SU to L, let's call it SU to L prime or Miller SU2 and UR hyper prime. So throughout today's talk, if you find a superscript prime, that means that those particles or fields are parity partner of the Stammerer counterpart. So in this way, we can restore the parity symmetry.
Okay, I may be wrong. So now you're imposing, so there is still a CP phase in the cup. So your symmetry, so there's still a non-zero arc determining principle.
Yes, I will talk about that in the next slide. Yeah.
So
thank you.
Then we'll come back in this. Okay.
And what is important is we only introduce single SU3 to solve the strong CP problem. So if we instead introduce SU3 prime as a parity pattern on SU3, that only relates the two strong CP phase, SU3 phase and SU3 prime phase. It does not solve the strong CP problem. It's absolutely necessary to introduce only one SU3 in this picture. So as for the matter content, we introduce full standard model content and their parity partner, including Higgs, and each Higgs breaks each electric gauge group. So let us get back to the Minard's question. What about, this may forbid the QCD telethon, what about the quantum correction from the Yukawa matrix? That is actually suppressed because of following way. So this is a Yukawa matrix of standard model and their parity partners. So what happened is this parity symmetry, which exchange Q and Q prime star, require that mirror Yukawa coupling is exactly the complex conjugation of the standard model Yukawa coupling. So as a result, two quantum correction, standard model one and mirror standard model, cancel with each other. To eventually suppress a QCD theta time.
Yeah, so this is the confusing part now. So why, in the low energy spectrum, I only have the standard model part? I mean, is this protected by corrections? I mean, because it's like wave function normalization, why doesn't this, with the fact that the symmetry is broken, why does it change the relation between delta theta and delta theta?
So first of all, as for the quantum correction, Yes. As you consider, that is eventually non-zero. It is found to be suppressed by higher loop order as well as a small Yukawa coupling, and found to be of the order of 10 to minus 16. Yes, we must explicitly check that.
No, but there's no problem. It's just funny somehow. It doesn't matter that the quarks are heavy here. So you have a sector that you're going to break, and it's going to be much heavier than the standard model sector. And this cancellation still persists.
Still persists at the level of 10 to minus 16.
Will you explain that more a bit later?
No.
You don't need to cancel that thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. To the complex space, then they're wrong.
Sorry.
I think the question is, if you integrate out all the other stuff that's heavy, and then you integrate down in the standard model sector, what cancels the standard model? But in the standard model, the correction is small, right?
Yes, although 10 to minus 16.
Yeah,
so,
this is what
the... so this is something like delta theta plus 10 to minus 6, and delta theta bar plus minus 10 to minus 16. So as a result, the still they cancel all the order of 10 to minus 16.
To the fact that the that theta bar runs incredibly slowly, so if it
basically scale, yes
it cancels there, it runs down, who cares?
Basically yes, yeah. So we can solve a strong CP problem in this way.
And just by the way, just are you going to talk about specifically how you break this parity symmetry eventually, or?
Exactly, yes, yeah. Yes, see, that is the most interesting part probably. So I promise you to show some dark matter phenomenology. So this scheme has a dark matter candidate. So because of this gauge structure, we have unbroken Miller electromagnetism. So as a result, as our electron is stable, those Miller electrons or lightest Miller charged particles are absolutely stable. So, and they are dark matter candidate. But that's fine. Then we want to discuss phenomenology. So we want to know the mass of dark matter as well as its interaction strength with standard particle. So to discuss, for example, direct detection rate in the, so for xenon detector. Interestingly, in this scheme, both are predicted. Now let me first talk about the first. How about the mass? Their mass is basically given by the Yukawa coupling times the Miller electrophilic symmetry breaking scale. Because of Z2 symmetry, this Yukawa coupling, for example, Miller electron Yukawa coupling, Miller up Yukawa couplings, are almost as large as that of standard part. So we know this value. What about the scale? V prime. So to see if we can fix V prime, let us just consider the minimization of the potential of Higgs and the Miller Higgs. So this is a generic term which is consistent with that parity symmetry. So we have one combination of quartic coupling. So another combination of the quartic coupling, as well as a quadratic term. So we do not observe the Miller quarks, which should have been produced at the LHC if their masses are right. So we need to consider the situation, the consider parameter as well as the vacuum, where this scale V prime is much, much larger than the scale V. So to see if that vacuum is possible and what the value of V prime is, so let us put the Higgs prime back to V prime, which is given by the balancing of this term and this term, and integrate out heavy degree of freedom to obtain the low energy Higgs potential. So which is found to be given by this combination, lambda prime times V prime square, as well as a quartic coupling. So to obtain this quartic coupling, it is necessary to integrate the heavy Higgs correctly, because this quartic coupling, lambda Higgs force, and that the three-level correction from the Higgs prime exchange almost cancel with each other and remain this term. So as I have said, we need to take V prime much, much larger than the electric scale. So to obtain the small electric scale, it is necessary to fine-tune this quartic coupling lambda prime to be much, much, much smaller than the one. So after that electric fine-tuning, it turns out that Higgs at low energy effective theory, his quartic coupling also is also very, very small. So this is just a three-level argument. So,
by the way, sorry, maybe, you're breaking the Z2 spontaneously by the judicious choice of lambda prime, right? So this is the sort of these flip-flop models.
Oh, what's that flip-flop model?
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, please let me know later. Yeah.
No, it's fine. But the point is this: you're assuming that you choose lambda prime to sort of destabilize the Z2 symmetric vacuum.
Yes.
And sort of flop over to one of the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. So this is no more than a three-level argument. What we should correctly do is to include Coulomb-Weinberg potential as well as the renormalization group improve the this Lorentz effective field theory. Then what happened after including quantum correction is that at the standard model level, the quartic coupling nearly vanish after the quantum correction at this mid-electric symmetry breaking scale and become large at low energy scale by the quantum RG correction. So we can then predict the value of scale V prime from the Lanyon standard quartic coupling. So this shows the Lanyon quartic coupling as a function of RG scale and the just quartic coupling, which is computed precisely in this paper. And actually, its quartic coupling nearly vanished at high energy scale. So this is a scale of the Miller electric symmetry breaking scale. So by multiplying this by the Yukawa coupling, so we can predict the all mass spectrum of mirror particle. And for example, we can know the mass of the dark matter, which is as large as 10 to minus 5, which is the up or electron Yukawa coupling times this scale, V prime.
But by buying this high Mirror-Vev at face value, and also assuming that, you know, there's nothing, I mean, this, sorry, you're extracting this high Mirror-Vev from RG running, which means you can't have anything else existing in that energy scale.
True. So here the crucial assumption is there's nothing, there's desert between V and V prime.
So,
yes.
So there's no way to not make this ultra-tuned and ultra-unnatural.
I completely agree. Yeah, this must have a fine-tuning problem over the V prime and the V.
I mean, not just a fine-tuning problem, an unsolvable fine-tuning problem.
Yes.
Not insert states in between here and V.
I think it's in principle to combine this with relaxion, although I have not thought carefully about that.
Up to relaxion.
If we want to solve the naturalness of hierarchy problem somehow, it should very weakly couple to this sector. In order not to disturb this picture at all. One example is relaxion.
Right, but that literally, right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it would have to be the relaxion. Fine. Okay. Yeah. Good.
So, so we can predict the dark matter mass once we know the Stern model coupling very well.
So, going back to your lambda prime, that had to be tuned now to 10 to minus 14, it
sounds like. Yes.
Your version.
Yes. That's electric fine-tuning. So then, okay, we know. So let me try to explain to you from this different perspective. This looks miracle. If we fine-tune the quadratic coupling, it automatically makes the quadratic coupling vanish. And there must be some reason. Yes. So if we put this lambda prime to be zero, what happens is the potential is almost UFO symmetric, such that the Higgs, which has two components, Higgs prime, which has two components, is embedded as a fundamental representation. And what happens is this UFO symmetry is spontaneously broken down into the U3 by the wave of Higgs prime. And we have seven Goldstone bosons, among which three are eaten as a W prime and Z prime boson, and four are understood as a standard Higgs. So this is the reason why once we fine-tune the lambda prime to zero, the quartic coupling automatically vanish at high energy scale.
Can you all do all of this? Going back to the Natchez question, can you? This is like a little Higgs model that's tuned.
Yes.
So can you just do everything at the TEV?
So yes, but what happened in that case is at the TV scale, the quartic coupling vanish. And if we run it down to the electric scale.
It only vanishes if lambda prime is zero. It only vanishes if lambda prime is zero. So let's say now V prime is of the order of V now. So everything is natural.
Yes.
So then why do that? Why not do that?
First, that is excluded by the experiment. Because that predicts that if V is as V prime is as large as V, V prime is as large.
Why isn't it more tuned, let's say, than little Higgs models? Let's say that V prime is TeV or 10 TeV, so that you have a small hierarchy. Why not do that?
By not putting in any explicit Z2 breaking, they are locked and doing only spontaneous Z2 breaking. They are locked in to generate their lambda standard model exclusively via RG effects that don't start accumulating until energy goes below V prime. So the higher
lambda prime, then they have to be zero, right? I can choose like a lambda V prime to be 100 TeV and like a lambda prime to be like 10 minus 4. And then like I get a quartic, which is 10 minus 4.
Instead of zero to start with. Right? But even if it's 10 to minus 4, that is already very small. It's essentially zero. And the predicted value of quartic coupling, Higgs quartic coupling at around is too small.
Yeah, but that happens in a lot of little Higgs models.
In the case
this is like a little Higgs model tuned.
So in the case of, are you talking about twin Higgs?
Something like the twin Higgs. Let's say that it's a perverse twin Higgs that doesn't have the SU3 mirror. So this would be the same model. So I'm asking why not do everything at a lower scale so that the tuning is less and everything is less.
So I'm more familiar with the twin Higgs. So let me talk about in the context of twin Higgs. In the case of twin Higgs, to avoid this conclusion, so we need explicit Z2 symmetry breaking, like different masses of Higgs and Higgs prime. Once we, this crucial depend rely on the Z2 symmetry is exact. Once we introduce explicit Z2 symmetry breaking, we can change this prediction. That's what we do in the twin Higgs, or maybe in little Higgs.
Would this break the solution to the strong CP problem if you were to introduce soft Z2 breaking?
So I will talk about that in. What's your question?
If I were to put an explicit soft Z2 breaking by giving the two Higgs and Higgs prime a different mass,
would that break
the CP solution?
There is a chance, because if we introduce explicit Z2 symmetry breaking, that might also introduce the explicit Z2 symmetry breaking.
It depends on what type of breaking it is.
Yes, it depends.
If it's a soft breaking,
if it's soft breaking, then for example, if it's soft breaking of the order of say TV scale, so probably the express breaking to the teratom is suppressed by the TV scale and some cutoff scale like Planck scale, so that can be small enough. Yes. Yeah. I think that is also another option. Introduce some. As a soft Z2 symmetry breaking and relax fine tune problem.
I know people have written all these neutral interference models. There's another world of papers where you do use that same, exactly like you do, the same model to generate different Higgs-Vev for left-right symmetric models and sort of have spontaneous breaking of left-right symmetry. Is there any way that you can just combine this and make a neutral interference model that solves strong CP? Or is there some reason that the left-right symmetry can't mesh
For example, I recently observed a very recent paper, so Fitch introduced extra Higgs Yukawa coupling to make this run faster, so that running becomes tuned.
They introduced a bunch of vector-like leptons
TeV
to just make the RG crazy fast.
Yep. Leptons. Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that is another option. Yeah.
No, but my question is, I know we can add stuff in the desert to make the RG running so fast that this 10 to the 10 becomes 10 to the 2 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. My question is, are the requirements of using the hidden sector to solve the hierarchy problem via neutral lateralness, are they incompatible with using the left-right symmetric hidden sector to solve the strong CP problem?
So I would say that it's phenomenologically unacceptable in this model, because if V prime is small,
right.
So these mirror up quarks are light, and they are unfortunately charged under our SU3 color.
All that you can fix.
Really?
I guess you can't, because you can't any kind of hard Z.
I do not want to introduce hard Z breaking.
You
can't
really cover. Need a huge V prime.
Yes, okay. From phenomenological point of view, first.
Because if you remove the change the Yukawas, then you're totally hosed. Mm. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. So what did I talk? So yes, this is the symmetry understanding why the quartic coupling is also small. So okay, we determine the mass scale. What about interaction strengths? So these two model has standard model electromagnetism and Miller electromagnetism. So they can, in general, mix with each other. Generically, that's free parameter we just fix by hand. But interestingly, in this model, we have four-loop quantum correction from photon, quark, three gluon exchange, and a mirror quark exchange, a mirror quark loop, and a mirror photon prime, a mirror photon. So here is the solution to the RG equation of the kinetic mixing as a function scale V prime. So various boundary conditions of the, this kinetic mixing. So here I put the kinetic mixing to be zero at the Planck scale, at zero at 10 to 16 GeV. So and we can obtain some prediction on the mixing parameter. What happens is, for example, dark matter, which is also charge and mirror electromagnetism, interact with the nucleon via this kinetic mixing. Okay, we fixed the interaction strength, so we can now fix direct direction rate.
See that you had there was.
Okay, I will talk about that in the next slide. It is relevant for this discussion.
Okay.
And this is related with strong CP problem,
and
by the way.
It shows up at four loops is really just an artifact of the symmetries of the model forbidding the 1-2-3 loop diagrams?
Yes. For example, the one gluon exchange obviously vanished.
Sure.
Two gluon exchange vanished because of Fourier's theorem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it comes from, it starts only from three, four loop level. Fourier's theorem. So here is a prediction. Here I assume that mirror electron is that dark matter, is a dominant component of dark matter. And I show the prediction on the direct direction rate for an experiment which has xenon target with a threshold of 10 kilo electron volt per ton times year exposure. For example, xenon 1T has one ton times year exposure. So here is the prediction on that the direction rate or nuclear recoil rate above the threshold as a function of the top quark mass for various barriers at SU3 coupling constant.
Here you're also assuming that E prime is the dark matter.
E prime is that dark matter.
What's the electron mirror electron mass? What's the mirror electron recoil, 10 to the minus 10 or something? Or?
So for example, yeah, it's you can coupling is 10 to minus 6-ish. Yeah, so for example, here mass is 10 to 6 GeV.
I see.
So and here I show I show the standard model value of the topic coupling. And here I show that I choose the gauge coupling constant, 0.118y81 plus minus 0.0011, which is the suggested value in the PDG. So you can see the clear connection between direct direction rate and the standard model parameter. What we can, in principle, do is to fix the standard model coupling measure the coupling very precisely, and compare the prediction on the direct direction rate with the possibly observed one in future. All right. So for example, it is considered if we build some future lepton colliders, so we can.
C prime, why don't you produce dark baryons?
Are you
have backup. Well, then, if you don't, let me not break the flow of your talk then.
Uh-huh.
You can come back after.
All right.
Just remember to come back to the question. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
The short answer is that possibility is already excluded, but I can elaborate later.
No, but that means you have to be able to reheat to produce C prime to be dark matter and not produce any baryons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So actually, this mass of mirror electrons is super huge. Usually, freeze-out mechanism doesn't work, so we need some non-thermal production of dark matter.
Yeah, why doesn't the thermal production mechanism also produce? Quarks of the hidden sector so that you get extra baryons.
So here we need this non-thermal production.
Yeah, So even if it's the inflaton, what makes sure that you just produce a prime and not everything else?
The only conceivable way I could imagine was that inflaton masses between the mirror electron mass and mirror Apgujeong mass to forbid the production of U prime by kinematics. That's the only conceivable way I could imagine.
Oh, so that's pretty special value.
Yes. Some value within a factor of few, I don't know, factor of two or so.
Okay.
Let's talk about that later. So here is the phenomenology about dark matter. So if you consider the lepton colliders can be measured the top quark mass with this accuracy. So in that case, we can predict the dark matter direction rate within a factor of few. So what about the neutron EDM?
Before we move away from dark matter phenom, is there an issue with, I know that the number density of this dark matter is very small because it's very heavy, but even so, if it has an unsuppressed U1 interaction, is that giving us problems with dark matter self-interaction?
So as long as the mass is above 1 dB scale. So here it is much above 1 dB scale. So it's fine.
So literally, if it's above 1 TeV, it can be EM. It can be EM strength long range interaction.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So we eventually break this parity symmetry spontaneously. So there must be eventually non-zero correction to the neutron EDM. So one example is from higher dimensional operator of this form. This is consistent with the parity symmetry. But after the H prime of the wave, this leads to the non-zero value of the neutron EDM. So this is the prediction. So this is the prediction on the induced QCD Theraton as a function V prime. And if this coefficient is order one, so this V prime should be above 10 to should be below 10 to 12 GeV, so it is already in tension with the constraint from xenon 1t. But if instead the cutoff scale is not reduced Planck mass, but the Planck mass 10 to 19 GeV, that we should take C to be 10 to minus 2, so we still have some room to check. But in this scheme, so large V prime can be probed by the non-zero value of neutron EDM, while a small V prime value because of the smaller dark matter mass can be probed by the dark matter direct direction. So whatever the value of the V prime is, we can eventually probe the whole parameter region in this scheme.
Assuming you can produce it prime.
Sorry?
Assuming you can produce it prime.
Yeah. So this is all about the dark matter stuff. So let me move on to the gut stuff. So now parity and dark gut. So we consider just copying the whole electric gauge group. So we do not have to do that. The minimal way to extend the gauge group. Minimal way to extend the gauge group is to introduce SU3 times SU to the left times SU to R times U1 B minus L, and of which that this our right-hand quarks, U bar and D bar, are charged under the SU to R. So this is often called left-right symmetry. So this parity symmetry exchange a left-hand quark and right-hand quark in the standard model. So in this scheme, although we need to introduce the extra gauge group, so we do not have to introduce extra particle other than the Higgs prime, which is a parity partner of our Higgs, and break this SU to right times B minus L down into U1 hypercharge. And the hypercharge is given by the linear combination of B minus L and the T3 component of this SU3. So this is SU to left-right symmetry. And this scheme also solved the strong CP problem. So first, since we introduced space-time parity, QCD Theraton is forbidden. What about quantum correction from quark? So to discuss that, let's investigate the structure of the Yukawa coupling. So because of this gauge structure, such that left-hand particle and right-hand particle charge and SU to left and SU to right. So we cannot write down the usual renormalizer of Yukawa coupling. So instead, we need to rely on this dimension 5 operator involving Higgs, Miller-Higgs, left-hand quark, and right-hand quark. So which can be given by, for example, by introducing some fermion at some intermediate scale and generate this Yukawa coupling by integrating out that extra quark. So let's call the coefficient to be C. And what happens after imposing the parity symmetry is that this coefficient is predicted to be Hermitian. So as a result, the Hermitian determinant of the Hermitian matrix have vanishing phase. So quantum correction to the strong CB problem vanish at the leading order. So what about the higher order correction? So we check the possible quantum correction and found that leading order should be given by the two-loop correction, which is suppressed by the two-loop factor, as well as small Yukawa coupling, as well as a small CKM mixing angle, and which is found to be of the order of the 10 to minus 11. Here, VCV is the 2-3 mixing of the CKM, and this is the up 2-3 is a contribution to the mixing from up Yukawa, and this is the contribution from the down Yukawa coupling. So fortunately, the higher loop correction is also suppressed to a satisfactory level. So the theory can be embedded into the.
The clip on. Sure.
Ah, sorry.
No, there must.
Be. I just have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Just put it here. All right. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. The theory can be embedded into SO10 in the following way. The symmetry breaking structure from the UV to IR is first, SO10 is broken down into lateral symmetry at the very high scale, like 10 to 16 GeV. And this lateral symmetry is broken down into Stammer gauge group by the Miller-Higgs wave. And the structure of the Higgs potential is exactly the same as the previous one. And we can fix the scale V prime from the running of the Higgs quartic coupling. And the embedding of the matter is the quark and leptons are embedded in the standard way, just 16. What is quite different from usual SO10 is this Higgs is embedded as a 16 representation of the GAT. That's the reason why we need to use the high dimension operator to generate the Yukawa coupling. So, okay, what about gauge gap unification? Here, I fix the scale V prime to be the one suggested by the vanishing of the Yukawa summer quartic coupling and check the running from IR to UV. So at the scale V prime, this U1 hypercharge is embedded as a linear combination of the U1 B minus A coupling and SU to right coupling. And round it down, round it up, they are found to meet with each other. And to me, this is very interesting. So for example, we like supersymmetry GAT because if we fix some intermediate scale, namely the soft scale, to be a TV scale from either the electric naturalness or the wimp miracle. So after fixing the intermediate scale, so the gauge coupling nicely meet with each other. Here, something similar happens. So we fix the intermediate lateral symmetry breaking scale from the Lanyon Stammer quartic coupling. Then after fixing it, we found that gauge coupling meet with each other. So let me quantify that this a kind of miracle better in a better way. So here, I scan over the scale V prime, because we do not know the exact value of the topic coupling, and scan over the gas scale where the gauge couplings are supposed to meet with each other. Now, I show the required value of so-called threshold correction at the gas scale in the unit of 2 pi over alpha. So for example, if there is order one mass splitting among the fundamental representation, so we expect the threshold correction of order one. So this is a point where V prime is 10 to 10 GeV and gas scale is about 10 to 17 GeV, and there's no threshold correction is required. But in the SO10, we introduced a large representation of Higgs, so there's no reason that threshold correction is very, very small. It can be easy as high as 5. So this region is also viable depending on the model. And here is as is the case for the usual gas, so this scheme predicts a proton decay. So this blue shaded region is excluded by the constraint on proton decay at super K. And the future experiments such as hyper K can be probed this region. So if threshold correction is as small as 5 and have a correct sign, the model might be probed by the hyper K. So, and this green band show here, and here show the predictions of V prime for the top quark mass with this uncertainty. Once we measure the top quark mass more precisely, we can narrow down the prediction.
So in order to see unification here, you have to say, I measure the top mass, I say when lambda, the quartic of the Higgs goes to zero, mm-hmm. then there I add the B minus L, and then are you assuming anything about the spectrum? You have to assume something about the spectrum. Are you assuming supersymmetric spectrum?
I assume no supersymmetry
so
here.
So you're assuming standard model running with the 3, 2, 1, 2, 2, 1, whatever. whatever the standard model plus the parity partner.
Yes.
That's the value. Okay. Mm.
So here's a to-do list on this GAT to make a statement more precise. So we need to estimate the typical virus threshold correction at the GAT scales. I guess it is smaller than Suji GAT, because in the case of Suji GAT, if we introduce some Higgs, we introduce complex pattern width and a fermion pattern, and a threshold correction tend to be huge. But I suspect that here, once we consider non-Suji, threshold correction tend to be smaller. And what about two-loop correction? Here I only showed the one loop running. We should definitely check two loop correction. And what about the bottom down unification? And most importantly, this scheme lacks dark matter candidates. So I want to consider, for example, if the WIMP dark matter can be embedded in this kind of theory. All right. So far I only discussed the 3, 2, 2, 1 gauge group as intermediate scale, but we can alternatively consider the more famous intermediate gauge group, namely Patisaran, which is SU4 times SU2 times SU2R, and SU3 color is embedded in SU4, and U1 hyper is embedded into SU4 times SU2R. And they are exactly broken to the 3, 2, 1, again, by the Miller-Higgs web. So here the prediction is a bit different, of course, because we consider different intermediate gauge symmetry. So here I computed the learning, assuming that left right symmetry breaking scale is about 6 times 10 to 3 GeV. So this is certainly rather than the one suggested by the Stanmore coupling. So in order to achieve this V prime, this large V prime, so we need to find the top quark mass about more than 2 sigma smaller than the present preferred value. So we will see what happens once the top quark mass is measured much more precisely and without any ambiguity. So in this scheme, the proton decay is more interesting. So this is the best point where the gauge gap unification is perfect without any threshold correction, where the V prime is 6 times 10 to 13 GeV. Here I show the required value of the threshold correction. If the threshold correction at the gas scale is as small as 5, independent model, so we can test the model by the observation of proton decay at hyper-K, as well as measurement of the top quark mass in future experiments.
Is this still allowed with a higher dimension operator you mentioned for the parity breaking operator with GG2O?
So in this case, you may naively think that since V prime is huge, the Teleton from higher dimension operator or dimension six operator is too large.
Yes.
But I found that if you start from the UV model, such as SO10, I found from extra suppression, and now the one-to-one correspondence between scale V prime and Teleton is unfortunately lost. It's possible if we introduce more symmetry. So I have a backup slide. Will this part record it?
Yeah, I think so.
So in the case of SO10, so we need the following symmetry breaking structure. The symmetry at the far UV is SO10 times CP symmetry. This symmetry moves 16 to 16 star. And this SO10 as a subgroup has a lateral symmetry without parity. So this is something like Q goes to the left hand quark to the right hand quark. So what we need to do is to obtain the lateral symmetry with the parity symmetry is to break this lateral symmetry and CP symmetry down into the diagonal group, which is a combination of simultaneous application of these two symmetries. So this is the structure we need to SO10. So in this case, if the UV symmetry is CP symmetry, so as a result, the higher dimension six operator, which originates from 16 Higgs, 16 Dagger Higgs, G tutor, or 45 is forbidden by this CP symmetry. So as a result, we need to insert, for example, some CP symmetry breaking field to this, and we have extra suppression between by the ratio between Gut scale and Planck scale. So this is why the one-to-one correspondence between the scale V prime and Teleton is lost because of possible extra suppression.
I see.
Yeah. Oof. All right. So yeah, I want to build Hyper-K as well as ILC to measure the top quark mass more precisely. So this is a summary of part one. So I plan to finish here. So we start with a strong CP problem, which is best clarified by the non-zero neutron ADM. And which can be solved by the parity symmetry. So this parity symmetry requires introduction of extra gauge group. So depending on the concrete gauge groups, we have either dark matter phenomenology, whose direct detection rate is correlated with the standard coupling, or the Gut symmetry break, we can embed the theory into grand unified theory, where there is some correlation between proton decay rate and, again, star model couplings. So, okay, this is all. Thank you.
Okay. That's a question we can have.
I imagine that. I assume this.
Yeah, because we interrupted you quite a bit and we started a bit later, so maybe you want to give a summary of your second part?
Okay, I can briefly give summary.
Yeah, yeah.
Second part is Second part is about action solution and its dark matter phenomenology. So action is another solution to a strong CP problem. If the QCD tetram actually depends on some additional scalar field, which has almost flat body. All right.
So now you
So so the most important parameter for action size is a decay constant and action mass. So there are bunch of experiments. Yeah, which is sensitive to the wide range of decay constant. The important question is, at which range of the parameter can action be dark matter? So we usually consider misalignment mechanism or the decay of topological defect like string domain world network or parametric resonance. So I plan to talk about the first and the third one. So the first one is about misalignment mechanism. I also skip this.
You can skip. Now you can go a bit faster.
So this is a required value of the misalignment angle as a function of decay constant. Yeah, if the decay constant is huge, say God scale, the misalignment angle must be small. Or if the decay constant is small, we need the misalignment angle exactly pi. Also, then looks fine-tuned, but there are some mechanisms to make them natural. Okay, I'll skip the motivation of why I'm interested in small decay constant. Okay, imagine that this is an action potential in the present universe. Imagine that actually action potential, imagine that QCD scale is much, much larger in the R universe, and the bike and the position of the vacuum is shifted by exactly pi. Now what can happen is action is fixed at the misalignment angle pi in the R universe, so that we can easily obtain the dark matter action from the misalignment angle of pi without any fine-tuning. This is actually possible, for example, in the context of two Higgs doublet model. So this is the teleton, action, QCD teleton, and the phases of up and down nuclear coupling. So imagine a two Higgs doublet model, like the MSSM. And so their relative waves are fixed by so-called B-muton. So for example, this is their wave in the present universe, here and here. But imagine that somehow their sign flips, as well as their absolute magnitude became much, much larger than the present one. Then what happens is, because, for example, the down quark mass flips, and we have three number of down quarks, this correction from the QCD teleton, from the up quark mass, shifts exactly pi. And since we introduce large Higgs wave, the all summer quark are much heavier, and hence, the QCD scale also become larger.
What is HI?
So here we can achieve this kind of situation by giving the B muton from the coupling with inflaton potential.
I see H is your inflaton.
And HI is a hyperscale down inflation.
Oh.
I parameterize it by in ways favored in supersymmetry.
See, the thing is that in supersymmetry, though, the phase of BMU is affected by all sorts of things. It's not just there's the Giugino masses that are important.
So
I guess what I'm trying to see is it a binary choice? Is it that the phase of this is it close to zero? Is it close to pi? So this is what I'm trying to understand, because you're simplifying the problem a bit too much here. You must have thought about what happens with the other phases of this, yeah.
Yeah, so here I assume some approximate CP symmetry to ensure that B mu term is real, and so that it is easy to just flip their sign exactly by pi. So yes, so if we have non-zero CP violation, that will surely quantum correct B mu term. But for example, anyway, if we assume the low energy supersymmetry or TB scale supersymmetry, the phase must be smaller than 10 to minus 3, for example, so which is not large.
Well, I guess experimentally.
So I guess the strongest constraint comes from electron EDM. And for the TB scale soft masses, the CP phase should be smaller than 10 to minus 3.
You're looking at the theory at a completely different vacuum, right? So it's not clear what happens with those phases either, right? Because you have the quark masses, there's just too many parameters. I mean, it could be fine. Maybe okay. That's an okay assumption. I'm just a bit confused. Mm-hmm. Continue.
So for example, so in this way, we can fix the action at the pi. So this here, I should predict required value of the decay constant action as a function of the misalignment angle from pi. So if the misalignment angle from pi is as small as 10 to minus 3, which can be easily pushed down by introducing approximate CP symmetry, the decay constant can be easily as small as 10 to 10 GeV. And whatever the UV theory is, we expect the quantum correction from the CP variation in weak interaction. So it's if we want to make the misalignment angle from pi to be smaller than 10 to minus 16, whatever the model is, we will need some fine-tuning. Anyway, with this parameter range, so we can make the decay constant as small as few times 10 to 9 GeV. And we can apply the same mechanism to the large decay constant. And so what we do is just not shift the potential by pi, but just to keep the minimum the same. Then we can also fix the misalignment angle close to zero. And
the colors don't show very well. That's the problem. So you have a light blue there. Yeah, because of the light. Continue, but trying to understand it.
You say continue. I see.
I cannot see the colors of the plot. I cannot see the regions.
I see. So here I show the constraint on the dynamical scale we raise, and the Hubble scale. And we show the constraint for several decay constant. If the decay constant is, for example, 10 to 16 GeV, if Hubble scale is above this line, now actual mass during inflation is smaller than the Hubble scale. So action cannot relax to the minimum. And this is that for the decay constant 10 to 17 GeV. So for not too small Hubble scale down inflation, we can fix the action to the minimum.
What is the dashed line?
So here the dashed line is so this is some model independent constraint. So here I consider in the context of supersymmetry. Where we need to introduce super pattern of action, namely saccion. This large QCD scale not only affect action potential, but also the potential of the saccion. So if the saccion potential vanishes other than the one given by QCD scale, saccion is destabilized to make the QCD scale smaller. So below. To the right of those lines, we need some extra stabilization mechanism to the saccion direction.
I see.
Yeah. So anyways, we have this wedge, inside this wedge is fine. So,
yeah.
And I can briefly comment on the parametric resonance. I see this is not so well-known mechanism. So imagine that what we call saccion direction, which is a real part of the Petrarchan symmetric breaking field, had a huge field value during inflation. So this is very fragile, for example, in the supersymmetric theory, where the saccion mass is protected by the supersymmetry, and saccion mass is also protected by the Petrarchan symmetry, and only given by supersymmetric breaking field. In this case, what happened is, as the Hubble scale becomes small enough, this radial direction began to oscillate. So since this radial direction coupled to the action, the equation of motion of the action contains an oscillating term. So as a result, action is produced by so-called parametric resonance. So this is the picture of the video of the parametric resonance. So here, action oscillate in oscillating potential. So then, starting from small amplitude, action is very amplified. So this is called parametric resonance. So typically, the momentum of the action produced by planetary resonance is as large as the frequency of the oscillation of the radial direction. So this is a formula for the action abundance. So SI is the initial field value of the radial direction. Action abundance is larger for larger radial direction wave, simply because the radial direction has a huge, huge number density to be transferred to the action. And it is inversely proportional to the mass of radial direction. So this is because if mass is smaller, it began oscillation later. So its relative abundance to the radiation becomes larger. And it is inversely proportional to decay constant, simply because action mass is inversely proportional to the decay constant. So here, action is produced with the initial momentum as large as the suction mass. So action has a chance to be warm. So here I show the formula for the action velocity at the electron board, temperature electron board, which should be smaller than 10 to minus 3 from the constraint of warm dark matter. And which is, of course, larger for larger initial momentum action and larger for the large action mass, larger decay constant because of smaller action mass. So you can see that action can be dark matter even for very small decay constant. So it might be warm. This is quite different from usual story about misalignment mechanism, where action is absolutely cold. And here, action is produced by planetary resonance. And action spectrum has a peak at a particular wave number. So I wonder if we could extract some astrophysical signature for this mechanism. But I bet this is difficult. So here, I show the formula for the enclosed mass of dark matter in this instability scale, in the scale, instability scale, which is 10 to minus 36 times solar mass, or 100 times the Planck scale. Maybe difficult. Yeah. Let me think more about this. So, okay, so we have so many action searches, but I would motivate the action dark matter for wide parameter range, because we can produce action dark matter for wide parameter range. Okay, this is all. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Many things.
You had a question about the stability, the problem with the dark baryons. Maybe you wanted to.
Oh yes.
Well, yeah, just
no, but he said, right?
Yeah, he said it even.
So the dark baryons in the first part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the cosmology is a bit iffy, right?
So, for example, let me just elaborate the problem. So, if you want to produce U prime dark matter. What we would do is produce U prime in the R universe and bind them together around the QCA phase transition. However, we have much more quark than the U prime. So they necessarily combine into the U prime quark or U prime quark bar. The problem is that they are fractionally charged. So because this U bar is charged, not charged under our standard model, but this quark is of course charged under standard model. So we produce, whenever we produce the U prime baryon, we produce a bunch of fractionally charged particle. We have strong constraint from, for example, by ionizing particle size. So here I show, for example, upper bound on the fraction of this fractionally charged particle normalized by the dark matter density as a function of mass and charge. We are interested in order one charge. Let's look around here. So yeah, so we consider around here. So the constraint is very, very, very strong. It's quite difficult to produce. Once we make the abundance of fractional charge particles small enough, certainly we will have underabundant U prime. So I think it's difficult to have this guy as a dominant component of dark matter. And the only conceptual way I can imagine is assume small temperature of the universe so that U prime is never produced summary and produce E prime from the non-summary, by non-summary, for example, from the decay of the inflaton. For example, then we can ensure that U prime is not produced by kinematics. So this is actually M5. Now let me know if you found better way.
preheat temperature has to be really low, because if you start, the mixing is large. I mean, 10 to minus 8 may look small, but it could be large enough that if you reheat too high, mm-hmm. you'll start producing the other guys.
Yeah, that condition is quite unavoidable. T much smaller than empty prime.
Yeah. That's very hard. Yeah.
Which is itself not a problem, maybe for barogenitors, as you could say.
Mass is not very small, so.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah. It's not as low as a mega electron ball.
Yeah.
You can still TV.
As far as we know, TV heat is an MeV.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, in principle. Of course, we need to consider seriously about how we produce baryon in that low reheated temperature case.
Yeah. Are there other questions?
Neutrinos here are much heavier.
Yes. So it can be also dark matter, but here I imagine that we introduce just generic interaction which is allowed. This then neutron prime can decay into LH.
Yeah.
You say that it's heavy, maybe because you imagine CISO.
Yeah, I imagine CISO, so that's why I was saying it's too heavy, because there's no suppression prime over M, whatever.
It's quite heavy.
Yeah,
I think it's natural that it's unstable.
Yeah, that one is naturally unstable, but you cannot reheat too high, so then this, you have to find, you cannot do leptogenesis in this model.
So what I found is we can in principle do so-called non-thermal leptogenesis, where the inflaton directly decay into right-hand neutrino. Yeah, that is still a viable possibility, I would say. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks again.